Rewilding is important to all children. They're all born with a blueprint of the needs they require, and the level of need is individual to each child. But to blatantly ignore crying, to put them in a separate room on their own to sleep if they don't want to hurt them whether physically or emotionally by ignoring them, that all plays a huge part in who they become. It affects their relationships with others, their viewpoint of the world, their relationship with other than human kin. So it's not just affecting the individual child, it affects everyone and everything they come into contact with.
You're listening to the Untaming Podcast.
Rewild the child.
Here is your host, Emily Giles.
Hi, I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Untaming Podcast. Today it is the first quarter of the flower moon here in the Southern Hemisphere. I really hope you enjoyed the last episode with Nicholas Pino on EMFs. That was one I've been wanting to record for a long time. I strongly believe that EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies, are not acknowledged anywhere near enough as they should be for their influence on our overall well-being and health. In fact, we call them EMFs, but most people aren't familiar with that word. But if I were to say radiation, the automatic response would be, oh, I don't want to be exposed to radiation. Yet we'll happily ignore our proximity to our routers and use microwaves and Bluetooth devices, all of which emit very high levels of EMFs. And the closer you are to them, the greater the exposure. So EMFs, aka radiation, not to mention our use of smartphones that emit high radiation when they're connected to cellular networks and mobile data, like 3G, 4G, even 5G now. The electrical wiring in our houses, hairdryers, electric blankets, smartwatches, television and computer screens. I don't know whether people just prefer to take the risk of constant radiation exposure by continuing to use these things frequently, or if awareness of the dangers of EMFs, radiation, is still not widespread enough. But anyway, that's enough from me on EMFs. My last episode with Nick covered this all in great depth. Today's episode is extra special because I am recording my very first, and most likely only, solo episode. I put a message out on social media a year or so ago asking what you would like to hear me talk about in a solo episode, and it was pretty much a unanimous request to hear my birth stories. So I will share those and much more. A lot of what I'm sharing today are things I have written down in the past, so if it comes across like I'm reading something, it's because I am. Before I jump straight into my birth stories, I wanted to read a couple of points I wrote down last year when I was preparing for when Bianca Hagen from the Mama Yogi Bear podcast interviewed me. So one of her questions had been, how did you get into rewilding and how has it changed your life? And I guess for me it started as small things. So first, when I was working as a nanny in Canada, somebody mentioned to me how it was important that you don't put shoes on a child who can't yet walk, as it affects their ability to walk naturally. And this stuck with me until later when we were living in Auckland, New Zealand, and I was involved in a number of car crashes. They're another story entirely, but one of them left me with a minor hip injury. And I used to run marathons, and after my hip healed, I noticed it would ache whenever I would go for a training run. My parents had listened to a TED talk on barefoot running and recommended it to me. So I looked into being barefoot and didn't think it hurt to try. And after a few runs in bare feet, I bought some Vibram five-finger shoes and haven't looked back. And around this time, my husband suggested I read a Malcolm Gladwell book. I can't remember which one now, but it really made me consider the entire education system. At the time, I was nannying in Auckland, and the two older children went to a very reputable school, and I was able to experience schooling from, like, kind of from a parent's perspective as the nanny. So the mornings were usually very stressful, you know, waking up the tired kids, hurrying to get them dressed, to stop playing, to make their lunches and make their breakfast and walk to school and do all of this on time. And then in the afternoon, they were usually tired and grumpy, and getting through their homework was such a chore for all of us. And this is Monday to Friday for about 40 weeks of the year. So I ultimately looked into homeschooling and thought it would be much more family and child friendly. And having that experience from the other side later when I worked as a teacher in Germany, it really solidified for me the decision that when we had children, I would be homeschooling them. Traveling in Europe, we met a lot of people living alternative lives that really made us rethink the whole 9-to-5 lifestyles that are common in the West. And then settling in Portugal, we met a community of like-minded people from all over the world who had also gone there to live off-grid. And this opened my eyes to things like governmental restrictions, red tape, and food security. I had already chosen to have my future children at home, but after heavy research, I ended up having them at home without a midwife present. Not a choice many would view as wise, but something I'm very glad I did, because all of their births would have been considered emergencies due to variations of normal, and that would have completely changed the experience into something controlled and managed by someone other than me, not to mention how highly stressful and full of intervention it could have been for all of us. All of these things, you know, seemed unrelated. Barefootedness, homeschooling, living off-grid, growing our own food, home birthing. But then I discovered the term rewilding in its definition for rewilding humans, and I learned how it encompasses all of my own viewpoints and so much more. There were other podcasts out there that focused on rewilding for adults, on doing restorative exercises and undoing a lot of the cultural conditioning that has happened to us our whole lives. But I just kept thinking, but what if we start with children? So they don't have to undo anything. The way we birth our children, communicate with them, respond to them, feed them, educate them, allow them to move. All of these things have a huge and often irreversible impact on their development. And to me, it's important, rewilding is important to all children. They're all born with a blueprint of the needs they require, and the level of need is individual to each child. But to blatantly ignore crying, to put them in a separate room on their own to sleep if they don't want to hurt them whether physically or emotionally by ignoring them, that all plays a huge part in who they become. It affects their relationships with others, their viewpoint of the world, their relationship with other than human kin. So it's not just affecting the individual child, it affects everyone and everything they come into contact with. And I think a surprising thing about rewilding is that it makes ordinary life so much easier. You're not trying to fight against the natural things that our children and our bodies want to do to conform with what those societal expectations are. So anyway, those were just some of my thoughts on why rewilding is important. Another question Bianca asked me was, what ways am I rewilding my children? I'd never really stopped to consider all of these before, and part of me is a little nervous to share them all because each one sets me apart as that weird parent. But on the other hand, those of you listening might be able to identify with one or some or maybe most of these and feel like you're not alone. So if that's you, please get in touch and let me know. So I'll just list some of these rewilding practices we have in our family. Extended breastfeeding and home births. I breastfed my eldest, my son, till about 2 months after his fifth birthday. And my daughter has just turned 4 and she still has some milk, I don't know, maybe once a week or two. That's one, encouraging the children to help with chores and cooking and cleaning alongside me, even though it usually makes those things take 4 times longer. Barefootedness. I don't need to explain this to you. I've got my interview with Ray McClanahan that really goes into depth on bare feet. We spend a lot of time outside and especially naked, even in winter, like year round, so they develop a base tan and don't get sunburnt in the summer. And I let them decide if they're cold or not. You know, if they want to wear next to no clothes outside in winter, they can do that. I'll usually, or they, one of us will carry warm clothes for when they reach their limit. I practiced EC, elimination communication. I homeschool my kids. We do a lot of walking and hiking. The dogs are really great to encourage us to get out and do that. Overnight hiking, sleeping in tents, you know, more time outside, getting those free electrons from the bare ground, learning to collect and cut firewood and set fires, cooking on fires. We avoid screens as much as possible, but we definitely do still watch shows and movies, but certainly not every day, and sometimes we can even go over a week or so without anything. We don't actually have a TV, we just have a projector to watch things on. So that probably helps with limiting screen time, since they don't yet know how to turn it on themselves. Long hair, more so as like a freedom of expression. Plus there's also how like the weight of the longer hair combined with brushing stimulates those micro muscles around each hair follicle to encourage its growth. But yes, my son has very long hair and we've suggested that he cuts it many times because brushing it can be a challenge, but he really loves it, so it's down to his waist now and it looks beautiful on him, even though he often gets mistaken for a girl, but he politely corrects people now. They help me in the garden growing plants together. We have our own farm animals. This is probably more homesteading rather than rewilding,
but still along the lines of living self-sufficiently.
Allowing them to use knives. My son recently got his first knife. We made this into sort of a rite of passage for him. He lost his first baby tooth about a month ago, and one of his challenges was to demonstrate that he could safely prepare and light and maintain a fire, and that was his rite of passage to receive a knife. We didn't make any sort of ceremony about it. We just bought one online and gave it to him. But he really cherishes that knife. He also has a bow and arrow, which both kids love to use. Together, we're learning to identify edible plants and mushrooms. And at some point, we will probably learn how to use a gun. Frequently going fishing, responding to the kids, cuddling them, never telling them to stop crying, taking the time to help them. Even if it means we're late, we arrive happy, and we are late most of the time. We sleep with the sun. So this kind of relates to my next one as well, which is little to no light at night, like red light. My kids, right from birth, they tend to go to sleep about an hour after the sun sets. So in summer, they're easily up to at least 9, often 10 o'clock at night. And in winter, they can frequently go to sleep as early as 6, but typically around 7. And still, yeah, in the winter they would sleep longer as well, probably about 13 hours on average at night, whereas in summer it would be a bit shorter, maybe 11 hours. If the weather permits, we'll eat outside whenever we can on the ground, sitting on the ground. Cleaning products, all our cleaning products are homemade with natural ingredients. I typically just use like vinegar and baking soda, that sort of thing. And same with like our shampoo and conditioner and soap, that's all natural, handmade. And our sunscreen, we have a natural, mostly zinc sort of sunscreen. I've used baby sign language with all of my kids from birth, and that's been really useful. We don't use any sort of perfumes or spray cleaners or insect sprays. No, you know, nasty, harsh, endocrine disrupting chemicals.
We use environmentally friendly laundry detergent, soap nuts, which I've talked about in one of my interviews with Nadine Artemis. I think it was my first interview with her. In terms of our food and our diet, I try to stick with a rule of thumb of an animal food, a plant food, a bacterial food, and a fungi food per meal. And, well, typically it ends up being a bacterial food and a fungi food at least once a day. And ideally that would be kind of raw dairy, free-range eggs, organic meat, non-sprayed vegetables, all real unprocessed foods. But obviously that's all dependent on availability, cost, etc. I keep my phone on airplane mode pretty much all the time, which is really annoying for people when they try to get in touch with me, which is why most people know not to try and phone me. Basically just having an awareness of the EMF emitting items in our house. Like, we don't have a microwave, and most of the electrical devices we have aren't used frequently. And as you know from the last episode with Nick, Wi-Fi routers are one of the highest household emitters of EMFs, and they're usually on constantly. The closer you are to them, the more damaging the radiation. A good rule of thumb is to locate them at least 3 meters from any heavily occupied areas like bedrooms, kitchens, and living areas. But with children and their thinner skulls, you really want them at least 6 to 10 meters away from these areas. I have friends who turn their router off at nighttime, which is such a great practice to get into. As some people do this with a timer as well, so they don't have to worry about forgetting to turn it off at night. And yeah, like we said in our last episode, even if you don't experience the effects of EMFs, they still have an impact on your body. And with, I think there'll be more of an awareness about this in the coming years. It is already gaining traction, especially sadly with so many more children being diagnosed with childhood cancers and things like that.
And along those same lines of electricity usage, I really miss living off-grid. It gave us such a conscious awareness for the power we were using so that we set ourselves up to need and use as few electrical items as possible. Even though we're now living somewhere that's connected to the grid for electricity, I still try to keep this in mind for a few reasons. To reduce our footprint as much as possible so that we can still live when the electrical grid collapses. And also to set an example to the kids of how things can be done manually, so they can also survive when the grid collapses.
An important one to me is that we sit on the floor to eat our meals. We just have like a low dining table and no chairs. We don't have any sort of couch or armchairs, and our mattresses are directly on the ground. We do still have like bean bags and things like that, so it's comfortable in our living area. But this benefits our whole family in improving our range of motion. And for example, if I think back to when I was younger, I would spend 2.5 to 3 hours a day, Monday to Friday, on the bus to and from school. At least 5 to 6 hours of the 7-hour school day sitting at a desk. Then come home, sit in a chair to eat our meals, sit at a desk to do my homework. Recline on a lazy boy or couch to watch TV and then go to bed, which was once again raised to chair height. And this was encouraging maybe 2 to 3 very regular positions that my body spent the majority of the day in, which is a form of repetitive stress and also encouraging a tucked pelvis. So not only am I trying to correct these poor lifestyle movements now in my 30s before they come back to haunt me in another 20, 30, 40 years with pain, injuries, and limited mobility issues, but I'm trying to maintain this full range of motion in my children's bodies so they don't have to do restorative exercises and so their bodies are strong enough to recover from any accidental injuries they do sustain. And this floor living lifestyle is probably even more important for my husband since he has to work at a desk most of the day. And if you remember from my interview with Katie Bowman, it is impossible for a man to sit in a chair without squashing his testicles. So they always have to tuck their pelvis to sit comfortably in a chair, which is damaging for the lower back and consequently the internal organs. And there's probably a couple of other points that I would love to improve, but it's not possible for me now. For example, clothing. I would love to be able to make our own clothing. Yes, that's one I'd love to focus on further down the line. And another one is toilets. I really miss our toilet in Portugal. We had a compost toilet. And so I hate every single time when I have to flush a toilet and I'm like, oh, all this, everything that I'm flushing, it could be used for wonderful fertilizer for the garden, and that waste of water with each flush. And also toilets are so raised. If you remember from one of my interviews with Ainsley Rowan, we talked about how you really, if you're using a toilet, you must have your knees above your hips. And unless you're very tall, most modern toilets are not low enough to make that possible.
Oh, and I forgot to mention that we bed share too. Our kids have slept with us right from birth. For those first at least 2 years, they were exclusively next to me for ease of breastfeeding whenever they needed to. We have two double mattresses on the floor next to each other, like a great big family bed. As they've gotten older, it changes day to day. We're in the bed, we all sleep. In this new house, we've set up a bedroom for them for the very first time. They've had it available to them for about 2 weeks, and I think they spent the first two nights in there before coming back to us. We anticipate there'll be a lot of back and forth over the years until eventually we'll miss this co-sleeping stage of our lives. I really love and take comfort in waking up in the night, hearing the breathing of all the members of my family cuddled up in bed together, everyone feeling safe, loved and held.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favourite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.